Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons, from rustic ranches to pixie parties. And today we're talking about rocks, and we're talking about that other thing, Will. It's a P.
Peritons.
Peritons.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
It is Year of the Big Guy.
Oh, my God.
Though,
so good. It's been a while since we did a big guy.
Yeah, and though the rock isn't really a guy, but a bird.
But it's a big bird.
It is a big bird.
Is it?
In real life, the rock is a big guy, but...
Oh, okay. Is it? Oh, yeah. Like, you mean Dwayne Johnson.
I mean Dwayne Johnson.
Okay, cool.
But the rock in D&D is not a guy, but a bird. But it's without a doubt the biggest one. It is the biggest bird, for sure. That's kind of its thing.
Big guys like rocks.
Big guys do like rocks. The rock is actually tied to the big guys. We'll get into it.
Okay, cool.
So,
nice.
Dang, your tablet and its freaking notifications getting in the way of my notes.
Oh, yeah. It does do that. Did the episode... It must be 4 o'clock.
It is. It's past 4 o'clock. So, in fact, the bigness is pretty much its primary attribute. So much so that they definitely make the 5 biggest things we ever talk about on the show list.
Oh, wow.
So big, the giants actually ride these things through the sky.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so big that the second edition Monsters Manual describes them as looking too big to be real. And the 3.5 version of Monster Manual quotes as saying, too big to be believed.
Like you see it from very far away, but you think it's much closer than it is. And then it just keeps getting fucking bigger.
Very true.
And then it just keeps getting bigger.
Yes.
And then your mind starts to break, like if you saw an old one.
That big.
How?
It is listed as size category gargantuan, but it is one of those monsters like paper worms that I believe should have a higher category of colossal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But all in all, these huge birds of prey dwell in warm mountainous regions and are known for carrying off large animals, cattle, horses, and elephants for food. Mm-hmm. They are the natural kings of the sky, only challenged by dragons and possibly storm or cloud giants. And they're primarily based off of the Middle Eastern mythological creature of the same name.
Okay. How many of these could there possibly be?
That's a great question, Brian.
Okay.
I don't know.
They do give them
like a territory range, which we'll go over in a bit.
All right.
But I think the idea is like one per region tops.
Okay. So, but they're hanging at like giant areas.
Yeah. They like mountains, especially.
Well, I mean like areas with giants. Also giant areas.
Like,
it has to be giants.
They don't really like giants, but giants can tame them and ride them through the skies.
Right. Well, isn't Cloud... the one that has, like, animals at its disposal? Like, it has farms or, like, petting zoos?
They have menageries, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, in real-life mythology, the rock was depicted as an enormous legendary bird of prey.
Mm.
It appears in Arabic geographies and natural history, popularized in Arabian fairy tales and sailors folklore. The origin of the concept is not entirely clear, but some historians point to the Hindu solar bird Garuda, the mount of Vishnu, as a direct inspiration for the rock.
Nice, okay.
Still, like some creatures we have talked about, God, your tablet is doing weird shit again, and I've lost complete control of it.
It's an iPad, Will.
Yeah, I know, and I hate Apple products. Where was I? Yeah, still like some creatures we've talked about on the show, the rock was actually considered by many at the time, including prominent scholars and historians, to be a real actual creature and not as something cryptozoological. Like, people believe this was a real thing that existed.
Oh, okay, for sure.
In fact, famous world travelers Marco Polo and Ibn Battuta have written accounts of witnessing the rock during their travels. Ibn Battuta claimed to have seen one over the Sea of China like a mountain hovering in the air.
Oh, man.
And Marco Polo claimed the bird nested in Madagascar, and his description was as follows. It was for all the world like an eagle, but one indeed of enormous size, so big, in fact, that its quills were 12 paces long and thick in proportion. It is so strong that it will seize an elephant in its talons and carry him high into the air and drop him so that he is smashed to pieces. Having so killed him, the bird swoops down on him and eats him at leisure.
Oh.
So that Marco Polo wrote that.
Nice. Okay.
In D&D, rocks are depicted as pretty much identical to the real-life mythological counterpart. Rocks resemble large eagles with either dark brown plumage or all golden feathers from head to tail. In a few rare instances, rocks are all red, black, or white. Have been sighted, but such sightings are often considered to be bad omens. At first sight, a rock silhouette looks much like any other bird of prey. As it descends, however, its unearthly size becomes terrifyingly clear, much like the scenario you described beforehand.
Okay.
In flight, a rock's wingspan spreads 200 feet or more. At rest, perched upon the mountain peaks that are its home, the monstrous bird rivals the oldest dragons in size. These giant birds are 60-plus feet long from beak to tail feathers and weigh approximately 8,000 pounds.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. Furthermore, Forgotten Realms has a variant of rock known as the Zakaran rock. Zakaran rocks are monstrous raptors found in the land of Zakara, a peninsula in the far southeast of Faerun. They are even larger versions than their northern cousins. Zakaran rocks are beautiful creatures decorated with colorful plumage. Their wings are usually a shade of green or gold. Females have a brilliant white breast. Their massive beaks range in color from ivory to bronze. Zakaran rocks include a two-headed version of the giant bird, but essentially, Zakaran rocks are simply rocks, but twice the size.
Okay.
So 400 wing in diameter and 120 feet from beak to tail.
It's hard to even conceptualize.
Yeah,
that.
They're getting so fucking big.
It's so big.
Yeah.
Fucking birds.
You're the big guy.
You got the hollow bones. Like, you know, the potential of the weight, you know, could be much higher.
Yeah, it's true. So few sources bother with an origin for rocks. Again, for the most part, they're just giant super eagles and no explanation beyond some animals are really large is necessary. But the 5e Monster Manual does give rocks an origin story and ties these winged monstrosities to the story of the giants and their fallen empire.
They got rocks, like the big, like, I know they got giant eagles in Lord of the Rings, but they got rocks in Lord of the Rings? Why didn't the rocks take the hobbits to Mordor?
They don't have rocks in Lord of the Rings, okay. Although one could argue that the giant eagles are rocks.
Okay.
So in the ancient days, when giants battled dragons for control of the world, Anem, the father of the giant gods, created the rocks so that his worshippers might challenge the dragon's dominance of the air.
Oh, wow.
But as we know, the giants lost that war. Mm-hmm. And when the war ended, the rocks were freed from giant domination and spread throughout the world.
Okay. The dragons were like, we are one brain. You are two. It'd confuse you the fuck up.
Yeah,
and hit
there
you
we
with
go.
This lightning breath.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Forey claims that rocks are creatures with close ties to the elemental chaos and are direct cousins of phoenixes and thunderbirds.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So they're up there. They're just in magical company.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Rocks are solitary creatures that can live for centuries. They layer in nests made from trees, tents, broken ships, and the remains of caravans they carry off, placing these massive tangles in mountain clefts out of the reach of lesser creatures.
Oh, man. You carry off a whole caravan of shit.
I just know. Like... It's exactly it.
Oh, man.
Sometimes a rock's nest contains treasures from the caravans or ships that they raid, but these creatures are heedless of such baubles. More rarely, a nest holds eggs that are taller than a human produced by the rock's infrequent mating. Rocks do not nest too closely together, since such a high concentration of these hungry predators would deprive entire regions of its animal population. They're just too big.
Okay.
Rocks actually fit quite nicely into the D&D food chain, though, serving to keep down the number of large predators in a given area, as they are fond of ankhags, purple worms, harpies, manticores, all that shit. They eat it all up.
Okay.
And some say that it is thanks to the rocks' prodigious appetites that these creatures are not swarming about with impunity.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So this is one of the ongoing questions I have of Dungeons and Dragons, is what is keeping all this horrible shit back from... you know, consuming humanity.
Yeah.
And it's rocks.
It's rocks.
They're eating all the extra
rocks
riches.
The whole time.
It's been rocks all along. No one ever sees them.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they probably fucking really do.
They really, really do. So they fly great distances in search of food, soaring high above the clouds to reach their favorite hunting grounds. A rock seldom hunts swift or small creatures and ignores towns and forests where prey can easily take cover. When it locates a large and slow-moving target, such as a giant, a whale, or an elephant, a rock dives down to snatch its prey from its massive talons.
Nice.
Though cloud giants and storm giants still sometimes tame these great birds, rocks just as often treat them as potential prey.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Though no particular race or group of people necessarily get along with rocks, save perhaps druids, one race in particular has an ongoing enmity with the gargantuan birds, dwarves.
Ooh.
Dwarves
hate all things big.
They really do. Dwarven mines located in remote mountains often have to contend with unruly rocks intent on protecting their territory. Attempts by the dwarves to tame rocks have thus far all met with failure, so the accepted manner of dealing with the rocks is to kill them and smash their eggs. Mm. Adventurers who happen on a community of mountain dwarves may find employment as rock hunters. Such groups would do well not to allow any druids to find out about this, though.
Okay.
And I honestly love the idea of a party being hired to kill a rock, and then after doing so, accidentally send the local ecosystem into like an out-of-control spiral.
Oh, man.
Like, the harpy population skyrockets, and travel becomes near impossible. Farmers start losing cattle at alarming rates. Druids get involved, and the responsibility to rectify their mistakes falls back on the party.
I kind of also like a mercenary guild that is trying to get more work and kills the rock for freezies, or tricks somebody into like paying them to kill the rock so they could get more work.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's a campaigner right there.
Yeah, that is. That would be fun.
Oh,
so any questions about the rock before you read off the stat block?
I would like to read the stat block.
Yeah, read that stat block.
I'm going to read that stat block, dog. Here we go.
All right.
Rock, so big. Gargantuan monstrosity, unaligned. Armor class is 15, natural armor. Hit points are 248. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
The speed is 20 feet of movement speed. Which I feel like, because just simply the size, that should be higher. Should be probably
That's
double.
That's what I was saying about Cyclopses, bro.
Yeah, like some. I understand the mechanical implications of having stuff walk around like that quickly.
Sure.
But the flying is 120 feet. That's a lot. Honestly.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's super a lot. Yeah.
This thing's got 28 strength. That's a plus 9. So 10 dex. That seems like it should be higher. But maybe not because it's so huge. I don't know. I don't know how that works. 20 con, 3 intelligence, 10 wisdom, and 9 charisma. This sounds like a really big ranger companion.
Yeah, sure. Companion. Can you imagine?
my big ranger and his big rock. Let's see. Saving throw. That would be cool. A god makes you enormous with your eagle companion and it gets a stat boost and make it look like a rock.
That'd be cool. Be super cool, yeah.
You get to fucking bow and arrow stuff all crazy. Mm-hmm. Saving throws, plus 4 dex, plus 9 con, plus 4 wisdom, plus 3 charisma. Skills, plus 4 perception, and the passive perception is 14. This thing does not speak languages. It is a challenge rating of 11, which is pretty high. I mean,
yeah.
This is good.
Yeah.
Keen sight, the rock has advantage on wisdom perception checks that rely on sight, very bird-like. Multi-attack. The rock makes 2 attacks, one with its beak and one with its talons. The beak, melee weapon attack, is plus 13 to hit, reach of 10 feet. Okay. One target. Hit is 27 or 4d8 plus 9 pierce. Talons, melee weapon attack, plus 13 to hit, reach 5 feet. One target. Hit is 23 or 4d6 plus 9 slashing damage. The target is grappled. Yeah, if you do the slashing damage, the target is grappled with an escape DC of 19. Mm. Until this grapple ends, the target is restrained, and the rock can't use its talons on another target.
Mm.
That's weird. You could drop one and grab another one, I guess.
Yeah.
But you can't get two people in this big talon.
I guess not.
I would homebrew that up a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it's got 2 talons,
It's got
right?
2 talons, so, yeah.
Okay. That'd be fun to have the whole party just get carried away in like one big 23 damage.
That would be hilarious, yeah.
But you could still attack the rock if you're... Oh, no, it's restrained. Restrained means you can't attack?
I believe it means you have disadvantage on attacking.
It, yeah. You can still get into its meaty claws.
Yeah,
meaty claws. That's it, though. That's it for the rock. Very, 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 very big, nasty bird.
Indeed. So any questions about the rock? I mean, it is what it is. It's a giant eagle.
Yeah, they're not like super duper smart at all. They're just big animals.
About as smart as an eagle.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. No, I'm good.
Short rest time.
Short rest.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey everybody, be sure to check out Super Quest Saga,
a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me. And set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
We've returned.
Indeed we have. And it's time to talk about another winged monstrosity of the sky, the Periton.
Another big bird?
It's a big bird.
Not as big as the Roth, who is the biggest of the birds.
The biggest bird, yes.
And maybe
exactly.
The biggest of most creatures in the game.
Yeah, it's up there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this one, though, the Periton, is much less a natural beast and much more of a depraved and twisted creation with an insatiable, bloodless, and malign intent.
Yes! We're back to Dungeons & Dragons, the way I'm more familiar with it. This is just like... This is evil, yes.
Okay, okay. This bizarre creature appears to be a blend of an antlered deer and a vulture, but with the intelligence of a human. Okay. Known for their taste for fresh humanoid hearts and their primary feasting on humans above all, these foul avian monsters are feared in rural communities far and wide. There is a lot of scary shit in the sky in D&D, and the Periton are among some of the nastiest.
Yeah, so you got like griffins, you got harpies,
manticores,
you got mantis, you got chimeras fly, right?
Yeah, they fly kind of. Yeah, kinda. They do. They do fly. Yes.
Yeah. What am I missing? Cloud giants.
Dragons. Dragons are in the sky. Wyverns are in the sky.
Tempest stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah.
Bad skies out there, guys. Dragons. Dragons, right?
Yeah. But back to Peritons. So Peritons, though not from any actual mythology, the Periton is also not a D&D original. Instead, it is based off a creature from, I'm going to screw this name up, but I'm going to do my best. George Louis Borges' 1957 fictional bestiary, The Book of Imaginary Beings.
Okay, wow, okay.
So he made it up. yeah.
No way.
A Periton's feathered and winged body is about 7 feet long and 5 feet tall. Similar to that of a giant eagle with dark green or gray-green feathers.
Okay.
Its head, however, is covered in blue, black, or purple hair and is roughly the shape of a deer's.
Yeah.
Its, Its maw is full of jagged fangs, and its talons are as sharp as razors.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photo. It's got antlers?
It does. On the top of its head is a set of extremely sharp and strong antlers, which are hard as steel and jet black in color.
Oh, my God. That's horrifying. Yeah. I'm looking at it. It's really terrifying
looking. It's scary looking, right?
Yeah.
Males have light blue chest feathers, while females have pale brown ones. A Perrotin's eyes glow an orange-red color.
Wow.
Now, that is a Perrotin's basic physical appearance, but there are a few key mysterious bizarre features beyond this. The first foremost among these being its shadow, which appears humanoid rather than reflecting the creature's physical form.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. Now, the hows and whys of this vary by source. Some say a Perrotin's shadow appears as the outline of whatever creature whose heart the Perrotin last ate, usually an adult human. Other reports suggest that the Perrotin's shadow is always that of human, and there is a legend told that they had once been humans themselves, hence the human shadow. Okay. Some argue that the only time a Perrotin casts its own shadow is immediately after killing a victim, but before consuming it. Others say that a Perrotin shadow reverts to its own only after eating a heart, and only for a brief period afterwards. So there's a lot of conjecture about the shadow.
Yeah, there's
no
people...
No one's clear about how that works.
Yeah, the townsfolk are just like playing telephone with like shadow physics at this point. They're like, I don't fucking know, man. Like, shadow physics are fresh to me as like a mechanic in this game.
Yeah.
So now it's like come up very shortly after our episode about them.
It's true.
So like, very true. I'm not really surprised, and I'm going to stop referencing Peter Pan from here out.
Okay, sounds good. So two other interesting features is their extremely tough hide. Some say magically hardened, and the fact that they exude a smell which apparently causes dread.
Yeah, I've smelled those before.
Yeah, so the origin story...
Is that
story-
you, Perrotin? Stink. You stink like shame.
The origin story of these creatures is also up for debate. The 5e Monster Manual shares an explanation for how these monsters came to be, stating that sages postulate that the first Perrotins were humans transformed by a hideous curse or magical experiment. But bards tell a different tale of a man whose infidelity caused his scorned wife to cut out the heart of her younger, more beautiful rival and consume it in a ritual intended to forever win her husband's heart. The ritual succeeded until the woman's villainy was exposed. She was hanged for her crime, but the lingering magic of her foul ritual caused the carrion birds that feasted on her corpse to transform into the first Perrotins.
I'm going to copy paste that out of your notes for my next dragon seducing bard.
There
this
we
is how
go.
We're going to kill this guy.
Yeah.
My wife is going to do it.
Yeah, indeed. A tale from Forgotten Realms tells a different story. Perrotins had once been a group of evil human bane worshippers. As punishment for the crimes, they were cursed by five gods of law. Lathander, god of the dawn, said, "You have been swift as an eagle in your flight from justice, so I curse you each with the body of an eagle." Mistra, goddess of magic, said, "Fierce as a wolf have you been in your persecution of the innocent, so I curse you with the teeth of a wolf." Torm, god of duty, said, "Foolish as a stag in rut have you been as you shunned what is true and good, so I curse you all to bear the head and horns of a stag." Ilmater, god of suffering, said, "You have tormented and torn heart and soul from your victims, so I curse you with unnatural appetites so that you may only live and prosper after devouring the hearts of your prey." Now, that one's questionable. Bro, what the fuck? Next one.
They're all questionable. Well, they're basically
"We're going to make you animals." And Ilmater's, "Yeah, but you got to eat hearts." Like, fuck, bro.
The gods were drunk, and they were fucking around with the like the character creator simulator,
uh-huh.
And they were like, "Oh, put an antler face on it."
Yeah, exactly.
Do it.
Finally, Maliki, goddess of the forest, said, "While you acted as beasts, your hearts contain evil which only humans can know. I curse you to always cast the shadow of humans you once were, to always remind you of your terrible deeds and of the souls that you have lost." Thus, the humans became Perrotins.
Okay, so there it is. We have the root of what the shadow is supposed to do. So
in that one story, there's already other stories. So
okay,
like,
here we go.
Yeah.
I mean, DM's discretion.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So Perrotins roost atop mountain ridges and lair in high caves. They prey on creatures living or wandering in the vales below, and travelers on lonely mountain roads learn to keep wary eye on the sky. Because normal weapons are less effective against Perrotins, the folk of the mountains know to avoid confrontations with these monsters at all costs. Established humanoid settlements are attractive to Perrotins as renewable food sources. As such, village councils and local nobles often hire adventurers to eliminate Perrotin nests. Perrotins are roughly as intelligent as humans. They have foul and violent tempers, but are capable of being intelligent, patient, and cunning. They make detailed plans for their hunts, and they carry them out meticulously. They can understand, at the very least, common, and sometimes other languages, but are incapable of speaking, at least not in words recognizable to most others. Some believe that Peritons have a language of their own, heard by humanoid ears as a series of pained or enraged screeches and roars, and even human-like screams. Mm. So, Peritons really are miserable creatures. It is said that they are perpetually unhappy creatures and despise their own existence. They are driven by a desire to kill others and someday ascend to a higher form of existence by eating a theoretical perfect heart.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay.
So they got this whole belief system. Peritons believe that the perfect heart must be eaten fresh, which is why they attempt to tear it from the living prey with their sharp talons as soon as possible. So strong is this desire that some more intelligent Peritons keep and breed humanoids to harvest their hearts. When attacking a humanoid, a Periton is single-minded and relentless, fighting until it or its prey dies. If a Periton is somehow driven away, it stalks lost prey from a farm, attacking again when the opportunity arises.
Shit, man.
Yeah,
they're scary.
They're vicious, man.
I want to use one.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Without the players knowing this lore necessarily, like, or if you're just, if you've listened to this episode as a player and your DM uses it, like, you as a character probably have never seen one. And if you do, getting this described to you, like what I'm looking at, what you're talking about, this is one of the scariest looking things that I've seen in the game so far.
It's very scary looking, yeah.
Yeah, of this size. Let's keep it tight. Because there's obviously like huge, scary monsters, right? But like this feels threatening for a low level party for sure.
It has a, I think for lack of a better word, it has a certain wrongness to its appearance.
Yeah.
Which I think is the exact emotion it's supposed to invoke.
Right.
And so kudos to the artist for the Monster Manual, 5e Monster Manual.
Yeah, good job.
It looks exactly how I think it should look. It looks like, it just looks like something horrible.
Yeah, it's like a deer coyote almost. Like it's not quite, the stag face is definitely there.
The closest thing I can say to how that image makes me feel is descriptions I've read from stories of skinwalkers. That's the same kind of feeling of dread you get by looking at the Periton.
Fucking skin, man. Yes. Those are scary.
So Peritons are mostly solitary creatures, but some are known to hunt in groups. These are often strained and tenuous alliances, though, since their chaotic natures make it difficult for them to cooperate. Fights over prey due to fear that someone else might have a chance to eat the perfect heart are very common. Periton females lay eggs with shells as hard as metal. It is said that acid is required to melt through these shells. Some scholars believe that the reason Peritons consume hearts is because of the high iron content of the organ, which is then thought to be used in both the Peritons' antlers and their eggs.
Cool.
And perhaps even their skin and feathers, because, again, they're immune to most weapons.
Yeah, okay.
In any case, a female Periton is not fertile unless she has eaten a fresh heart, and the heart must come from a humanoid. The female will then only remain fertile for an extremely short time, between 3 to 18 hours. A mated pair of Peritons share the duties of guarding their nests and sitting on the eggs, which have incubation period of up to a month. A hatchling has to be fed for the first month of its life and grows to maturity within 3 months. The parent Peritons often carry live prey to their nests and watch as the infants kill and consume them themselves. The young stay with their parents for as long as a year, after which they leave to establish their own nests.
Dang, man, dang.
So that's Peritons, man. You got any questions about them before you read that stat block off?
Just like okay with watching their kids eat hearts.
Not okay with it. They're like they gotta learn. You gotta learn to kill your food.
Finish your heart, boy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
I'll stat block it up. Let's go.
All right, sounds good.
We got a medium monstrosity, a chaotic evil bird.
We got a medium monstrosity on our hands.
Yeah, we sure do, boys. We're gonna take it down with these weapons. Psych. Armor class is 13, natural armor. Pretty good. Hit points, 33. We got 20 foot. See, this thing can move 20 feet and then a flying speed of 60 feet.
Yeah, I know. This is the exact conversation I had about Cycle Beast.
Right. So I'm with you, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I know you are.
So strength is 16. The dex is 12. The con is 13. The intelligence is 9. The wisdom is 12. And the charisma is 10. You don't got to be smart when you just want to eat hearts.
Well, I mean, it's 9. That's basically human.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Right. So, like I said, skills, perception is +5. Damage resistance, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical weapons. Senses, passive perception is 15. Languages, understands common and elvish, but can't speak. Mm. Interesting mix there. Challenge rating 2. So, the dive attack... If the Periton is flying and dives at least 30 feet straight toward a target and then hits it with a melee weapon attack, The attack deals an extra 9 or 2d8 damage to the target.
Mm-hmm.
So dive attack. Okay, flyby. The Periton doesn't provoke an opportunity attack when it flies out of an enemy's reach. So keen sight and smell. Periton has advantage on wisdom perception checks that rely on sight or smell. Some standard bird stuff. Let's go. Multi-attack. The Periton makes one gore attack and one talon attack. So that gore is a melee weapon attack with plus 5 to hit, a reach of 5 feet on one target. That's going to do 7 or 1d8 plus 3 piercing damage.
So painful to get gored by that thing's antlers.
Yeah, dude. It's going to stab you, and it's going to be in motion. I would put in like some push in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Talons are going to be the melee weapon attack with plus 5 to hit, reach of 5 feet, one target. It's going to do 8 or 2d4 plus 3 piercing damage. So just a ton of slashing and goring going on here.
That's what it does.
Yeah. It doesn't have beak. Yeah. It just got
I just picture our fight with this thing being very bloody.
Yeah. For sure. That's it, man. That's the whole stat block.
You know, this creature would make the great, like, would make a great antagonist for like a monster movie, like an actual scary horror one.
Yeah.
Imagine this thing like busting into like a log cabin and you just see this like bizarre monstrosity, or you keep seeing like glimpses of it. And then at the end it reveals what it really looks like. And it's fucking that horrible, horrible looking thing.
The first guy dies and you're like, right before you're like, yeah, man, Mike's a good dude. He's got a heart of gold. And then a bird comes in and takes it. He's like, he took his heart. It's heart of gold.
Yeah. Or like, they find the corpse of Mike with literally like he's all bloody and whatnot, but he's got a hole in his chest where his heart was and it's gone. And they're like, what the fuck?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyways. Oh, man.
I think it's time for a long rest.
Let's do it.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. What's on my feet? I don't know, Will. What should I wear?
I think there's a couple feathered slippies over there that I think are fitting.
The wings of a good sleep. I got slippers with wings. Mm-hmm. They're going to carry me into my full HP restore with all my spell slots. Let's go and talk about people. People, Will. People that like this show so much, they give us money to do it.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Could you stop the audio recording on that camera?
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. I thought I had done that, and apparently I did not.
No one can see.
Yeah, it's true.
No one can see this. Let's talk about some people that are loyal to not only us, but in turn, Demogorgon.
Indeed.
Shout out to Demogorgon. And here we go. We got Marvin Goldhart coming out the shoot.
Thank you, Marvin.
Let's see. We got Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Adam Buxton. Sorry, let me make this bigger.
I knew you weren't going to be able to see it.
I know. God. Okay. Adam Buxton, thank you. Cameron McGowan.
Thank you, Cameron.
We got Isabel West.
Thank you, Isabel.
We got Deeply Weird Lemon.
Thank you, Deeply Weird Lemon.
Okay, now let me go up to the next list because Patreon is
there's two lists.
So weird.
It is weird.
Thank you, Rampage Face.
Thank you, Rampage Face.
And then let's see here. And thank you, Gillian Romero.
Thank you, Gillian.
Thank you, Paul Sorensen.
Thank you, Paul.
And, yeah.
Did you skip a Nick there? I thought I saw a Nick. Scroll back to the top. The top three, third one down.
Oh, and thank you, Nick Farrell.
Thank you, Nick.
Farrell, Farrell.
I think it's Farrell.
Yeah. But, yeah, thank you for everybody that came in on Patreon. We really appreciate you guys. You're helping keep the lights on, and we got bonus content in there for you.
So early much episodes. Bonus content.
There's a lot of bonus content. I'm not going to name it anymore.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, some good stuff. And new merch. So.
We got that new. Okay, so we were going to do, what was it? An Indeed hat.
But
Patreon wouldn't let us do that.
Yeah.
Tried to do an Indeed hoodie. It looked really sweet. Wouldn't let us do that. They wanted to make us charge you guys more to have it. And I said, fuck that. Butch left us with a shirt or a mug. Let you guys vote on it. Our patrons voted for mug. So we got a nice Indeed mug. And honestly, it looks great. It's our best looking mug yet.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's like very, it's what we wanted. It's simple and to the point.
It's still D&D related. And yeah, I like it. It looks nice.
Indeed related.
Indeed.
Indeed. So
God, I say that word so much.
Yeah, you do. Now we got a mug to prove it.
I think we're ready to call it a game.
I'm ready to call it a game.
Thank
dude.
You guys.
Wait, contest.
We still don't know.
We don't know.
We still don't know.
But check our social media because
we'll know there.
That's the future us.
Yeah, future us knows. Now us, no.
Y'all saw Endgame. Time travel's so fucking whack.
Indeed.
Let's get out of here. Game.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.